Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing a number of equities as well as the wider market. And to do that, we're kindly joined by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Hello, John. Good to be back.
So, Alan, we, as usual, have got three equities that we're going to be discussing. But let's start off by looking at these markets. I mean, I think we're going to focus particularly on the FTSE 100. But I think for context and looking what's been happening in the wider markets so far this week, it's very much been a story which has been dominated by US equity markets, in particular the tech sector. Now, I think it's something that we did touch on last week in terms of the rising bond yields there causing some concerns for equities in the United States, particularly those ones that are classed as growth stocks. Most of those are technology shares that have had a huge rally since the beginning of COVID lockdowns last year. Saw some very sharp sell-offs, particularly in Tesla. I mean, that gave up about 30% of its value. Apple fell very heavily. Amazon was also a big faller, among many others. Just yesterday, we did see a recovery in those shares. There was a huge rally from Tesla. So it looks as though those fears over in the United States around growth shares are subsiding. But I just want to come back now, Alan, to the FTSE 100 and some of the companies there and what the moves in America could mean for FTSE 100 shares, and whether indeed it could actually be a playbook for looking at the FTSE 100. I mean, just taking some of the sectors that we would class as value here in London and the FTSE 100, the top risers so far this year have been mainly commodities and material companies. Johnson Matthey, one of the top risers, BP, Glencore, Shell, very, very strong so far this year. Also, we've seen a very strong recovery in travel shares, in particular IAG with airlines. That's something that was really to be predicted when we start to reopen. And we've also seen a rally in the financials, which for some time were languishing, but we've seen full-year results coming out, resumption of dividends in the bank. So they've seen a rally. Now, Alan, these companies do form the largest proportion of the FTSE 100. With them posting such a strong gain so far this year, I mean, what do you think that it means for the outlook going forward in terms of performance for the FTSE 100? If we've seen such a strong rally, and some of these shares are getting back up to levels or even above levels that we saw at the beginning of last year, do you think that's going to put a bit of a cap on the FTSE 100 in the short term?
That's a very good point, and I think there are concerns amongst many fund managers about the relatively rapid snapback to pre-COVID levels, justified, I think, in many ways. But let's not forget that, of course, the index, obviously fell and then trod water for the large part of last year, largely due to the lockdown. So, in many ways, the new valuations reflect a resurgence in the industry and also a pent up demand as well, and the opportunity for people to and businesses to spend money that they hitherto haven't been able to do. And of course, they've survived in many cases on furlough payments. Some businesses have survived and done very well, but there is generally an expectation that a lot of the leisure stocks will be driven by this pent up demand and cash that's waiting in the wings to go into the sector. That's coupled with, of course, the macro backdrop, which is still that the overall cost that coronavirus has cost the global economy and will continue to cost the global economy, provides, in my opinion, an almost unrivaled backdrop for long-term growth in commodities. And when I say long-term, of course, it won't go up in a straight line. We will see a series of corrections, and we're going through one now. But I think that you'll see, if you look at it over the period of a year, you'll see commodities continue to perform strongly. The bounce back in tech stocks last night, I think, in the US, indicated that there's plenty of appetite there too. And I think overall, there are so many new economies coming to play, and we're going to, of course, talk about that shortly. But particularly in the blockchain area, there's just a huge growth opportunity emerging there that's driving value. So people are making money through owning cryptocurrency, through mining cryptocurrencies, and also there's the new sector you and I were talking about beforehand, the era of non-fungible tokens, the digitization of assets such as art, music, and so on. That's a new economy in its own right. So whilst we may well see some of the more traditional sectors languish, I think there is plenty out there that's going to continue to drive growth in the economy and create prosperity for individuals, companies, and countries.
Yes, and there's some interesting topics that you touched on there that we'll come on to. But before we do that, I just want to sort of explore this. The balance between positive sentiment in markets at the moment and the underlying earnings. I mean, we always talk about the market pricing earnings forwards, 6 to 12 months. Mm. It seems as though that we've done that to some extent, because we're still looking at some relatively rich valuations on a number of stocks, and that's obviously in the expectation that we see higher earnings going forward. So any movement here, I think, would probably be around sentiment around the markets. I mean, and how much do you think that sentiment could improve from here? I mean, we're coming out of lockdown, so there's obviously some positivity. We've got a lot of positivity around that. I mean, do you think that it could improve further, and we just see people take stocks higher based on sentiment? Or are we going to really need to start to see earnings improve and a broad-based approach to the markets for things to be moving higher?
Yeah, I think you're right. Underpinning everything, earnings are key. And of course, as we've seen before, history has told us with the dot-com bubble, the expectations for earnings potential there was huge, but literally a handful of companies emerged from that era with anything like the sort of earnings that they were expected to deliver. And of course, that resulted in a significant correction in the market at the time. So we have conventional company earnings. We have earnings through the new generation technologies, the battery industry, the move into electric vehicles, but also electric propulsion generally for all sorts of vehicles. And I'm including in here marine. I'm including aerospace. There are new areas being developed in terms of propulsion. And of course, we've seen what the likes of Elon Musk with SpaceX have been able to achieve, which is something that would normally be the realm of NASA or the US government, is now being achieved by private individuals. So I think there's huge scope in technology, and the emergence of the opportunities in blockchain in particular, and the underlying strength of the commodity sector going forward, which makes up a huge percentage of the FTSE 100, I think that will negate and offset any weakness in other areas, both in terms of earnings and, of course, a general underperformance.
Indeed. So let's stay on this subject now of technology, and in particular, blockchain, Alan, with the first equity that we're going to discuss today. Just underwent a funding round, Argo Blockchain. huge rally over the last 6 months. Looks as though the board's capitalising on that for raising further funds at these higher levels to help fund growth going forward. But what's happening there, Alan?
Well, this is a fantastic success story, isn't it? I mean, it's, you know, the share, just the highs and lows of the year tell their own story. But the year low for Argo Blockchain has been 2.6p. The year high has been £3.39, and we're currently trading at £2.44. And of course, as you rightly said, the company has just raised 26.8 million via a primary bid funding round at 2p. Got that away substantially, and the shares have risen dramatically since then. But I might add, with good reason. So Argo Blockchain is its business is a cryptocurrency miner, and of course, basically you create Bitcoin through the process of mining, and mining Bitcoin essentially is the process of solving a computational puzzle to create a new to create Bitcoin. And of course, to do this, you need huge amounts of processing power, and, you know, in some cases, well, in most cases, huge amounts of electricity. So of course, the challenge for these Bitcoin miners has been finding areas where they can mine Bitcoin, get cheap energy, and obviously renewable energy if that's possible, and also a benign environment to enable that process to continue at as low cost as possible. And Argo have done that spectacularly well. So they've created a series of energy efficient operations across North America, 45 megawatts of active mining power at present. And there's some of the terminology here I'm just getting to know myself, has the most efficiency, the greatest amount of efficiency and creates the highest amount of petahashes or petahashes, PH, per megawatt. And that's the efficiency in producing a Bitcoin. But I said it's based on numbers, and I mean, the numbers tell their own story. And of course, the great thing about being an efficient cryptocurrency miner is that you can earn cryptocurrency without having to pay for it. And literally, for Argo Blockchain, it is a license to print money, if you'll excuse the pun. So in February, the company announced it had mined 93 Bitcoin in January, as compared to 96 in December, which generated the mining revenues of 2.4 million versus 1.6 million in December. During that time, the company saw a margin of 71%, so, you know, highly efficient profit margins and levels of profitability. Also, it completed share purchase agreements for two data centers in Canada, in Quebec, and took a 25% stake in Pluto Digital Assets, which is itself a decentralized technology investor. It initially invested 1 million at 3p, and it's got warrants with those shares exercisable at 6p. Then we start March, and the numbers improved again. 129 Bitcoin mined in March, that's versus 93 in February. A monthly margin of 81%, so the margins improved by 10% again. And it's just expansion all the way. It's bought a 320-acre plot in Texas to expand its mining operations. And of course, as we just said, it's raised 26.8 million via primary bid. But on to Texas, and the company said that the region offers the cheapest renewable energy worldwide, and it's a popular jurisdiction as well for blockchain firms. So clearly, by buying this huge plot, it's going to be generating many more Bitcoin once it's up and running. But also, very significantly, and a bit of history, the chief executive, Peter Wall, who's been instrumental in driving this growth, said he will from now on receive his salary in Bitcoin only. And he is the first chief executive in the world to do that. So highly significant move. But okay, it's had an incredible year. The company now has a valuation of 891 million. So yes, you can say from a technology standpoint, it's a racy valuation. But also, that was partly boosted by listing on the OTC in the US, given, of course, the operations are in the US. And I think given the way it's growing, the amount of Bitcoin it has in its reserve assets, I think the rate of growth here really tells its own story. And in my opinion, thoroughly wants the valuation the company has.
I mean, Alan, one of the biggest concerns around Bitcoin mining is the amount of electricity that it uses. You know, is it sustainable? And then, of course, you know, the cost of doing so. I mean, is there a point where the mining of Bitcoin becomes, you know, more expensive than the actual revenue that they get from it, sort of going forward? I mean, the way that the mining process develops, I mean, with a price that we're looking at around $50,000 on Bitcoin, of course it's profitable. But is there a point where costs go up and then Bitcoin falls, that then operations then cease to become economic?
That's a very good point. And I think therein lies the risk in buying into a company like this, because, of course, if there is a spectacular fall in the price of Bitcoin, and we've seen it happen, and it being such a highly rated technology asset, it's going to be volatile. That will continue. But I think with Argo blockchain, the telling issue is the margin. And, of course, the margin improved from 71% to 81% in February to 81% in March. So that says a lot to me that they've got a very efficient operation. And of course, let's not forget, just as Bitcoin develops and the cryptocurrency world develops, we've seen the emergence of non-fungible tokens as a new asset class, which are going to be absolutely huge this year. Just as these are developing, so the technology and the hardware required to produce Bitcoin will become more efficient too. So my view would be that, given where we're at, we will see firstly renewable energy sources being utilized to the max, possibly solar power being utilized more effectively too, but also other areas such as the actual hardware required to produce Bitcoin, that will become more efficient in time too. So I think one will cancel out the other.
Indeed, certainly going to be an interesting sector to watch through 2021. So, Alan, now moving on there's two more here, but let's start with tertiary minerals, ones that we've discussed previously. I mean, last year we saw the price dip beneath 0.2 of a penny, but we have seen so far this year a spike up above 0.6. It's dropped off since, but there must be some updates there that are worth touching on. What's been happening there?
Okay, so we're back to mining in the conventional sense of the word now, Jonathan. But certainly, I mean, tertiary minerals, just to briefly summarise, has a multi-commodity project portfolio. It also has a gold project in Finland where it earns royalties, and the company Orion Resources are currently drilling the Kereselka Finland gold project. And alone, that probably gives a valuation of about £2 million to tertiary before we get into the Nevada projects. And of course, in Nevada, we've got the Pyramid gold and silver project, the Paymaster polymetallic project, the Mount Tobin silver project, the Pegleg polymetallic project. We also have further acquisitions there, namely the Brunton Pass copper project, also the Lucky copper project has progressed as well. So the company has, over the past 6 months, undertaken a series of surveys, soil sampling, assay testing, or the preparation of assay results to report to the market. And today we've had the results back from Pyramid, which are very encouraging. The company said that rock chip samples had revealed up to 314 grams per ton of silver, And gold numbers were pretty impressive, up to 6.29 grams per ton. And this is just from soil sampling. That's before they go into the ground. They've also looking at the area of the Pyramid Project, the Western Line anomaly in the region. They say will now extend it down to the southeast, taking the area to a total of 1,700 square meters. And Patrick Cheaton, the chairman, this morning said that this was solid progress, with mineralization being confirmed across a much larger area. So the company going to start follow-up work later this month. But in a sense, what we've had today is validation that the asset is worth pursuing. We'll then get to the point where they'll start drilling. And of course, if the samples that they find further down bear out or are stronger than the samples they're finding on the surface, then I think we could see a material development in terms of tertiary's valuation in the marketplace. But even so, on today's news, as you rightly say, there's the share price hasn't really progressed. Currently with a market cap of just over 5 million at 0.4p. The other thing for shareholders is too that the company had a share subscription agreement with Precious Metal Capital Group, and that has now been completed. So the 600,000 investment that came in through that, the shares from that have now all been issued. So in a sense, what was an overhang in the market has disappeared. So I think as the results come in, we're going to see the tertiary share price progress, I think most people expect it to probably push on to a penny before the summer.
I mean, Alan, they have a number of projects they're working on. Is there any one standout project for you that Tertiary is working on at the moment?
Well, I think the what attracts me about this area is that they're based in the Walker Lane Gold Belt in Nevada, and that region is the fifth largest gold producer in the world, and according to the industry, it's the number one most desirable mining jurisdiction. So so there are so many successful gold mines. You've got the Goldfield mine, you've got Comstock, Tonopah, and these are all gold assets in the region of 4 million ounces. Comstock is 8.3 million ounces with 192 million ounces of silver. So it's a rich, fertile area. I think any one of these, Pyramid Gold and Silver, Paymaster, any one of these could turn into a multi-bagger or a multi-million ounce asset. So what I like is that there's an equal chance with all of them. There isn't one particular standout here because all of them are in this really fertile region.
Fantastic, fantastic. So, as I said at the beginning, one that we have discussed in some detail before, and I'm sure one that we'll touch on again as we get further updates. So, moving on, still in the gold sector, we've got Conroy Gold and Natural Resources PLC. They've released their 6 months report very recently, and yesterday we had a further update from them. Alan, what's been happening there?
Okay, so Conroy Gold has a number of gold mining assets in northeastern Ireland, County Longford, County Down, in an area called the Longford Down Massif, and they have the Clontibret, Clay Lake, Glenish, and Sleevgar assets with a combined JORC estimate resource of 517,000 ounces of gold. So they've got that line in the sand. They've actually got the value in the ground there. Now, last year, the company announced a joint venture with Anglo-Asian Mining to develop a mine at Clontibret and to continue exploration. And it was a staged investment where they would come in and certain milestones would be achieved and then more money would be invested. And this seemed to go quiet. So during the year, Conroy continued to progress the projects. And also, of course, it's not just based in Ireland. There is It has assets in Finland, in the Lapland Gold Belt, close to the Kittilä underground gold mine, which is the largest gold mine in Europe, with 4.4 million ounces of gold under the ground there. So, so during the year, the company has raised funds. Also, the warrants that were issued with shares previously were in the money, so it's raised a decent amount of money and is well funded going forward. So, with the results on February 26th, the company said that it had terminated discussions with Anglo Asian, but at the same time had entered a joint venture with a company called Demir Export in Turkey. And this is significant because Demir Export in Turkey have a valuation of some $5.5 billion, whereas of course Anglo Asian had a valuation of some $180 million. So this is a much larger company, and there's a firm agreement that Demir will spend an initial €4.5 million to earn a 25% option into the Klontebrink mine. Then a further 15% for a further €4.5 million in phase two. And to get the mine to construction ready status, whatever funds will be required will be put in. At that point, Demir will earn an extra 17.5%. That brings them to a total of 57.5%, of course, with Conroy retaining 42.5%, including what's termed as a carry loan to for capital expenditure required to take the mine through to commercial production. Once the agreement is approved, Demir will make an initial €1 million cash payment. And it's term project in this, so we're going to see, I imagine, before very long, that step being taken, and then work will start to develop Klontebrink. And I think at that point, Conroy Gold is currently trading at 36p. The shares have really traded relatively flat. They've traded as high as 36p on the year, so we're seeing a fairly flat, steady performance. But I think once that happens, then we will see we'll see a re-rating of the company. But also to add further drivers for the share price, the company announced yesterday that it had completed some work at the Sodankylä asset in Finland, which of course, as I said, is close to the Kittilä gold mine. It had completed a ground magnetic survey and identified potential gold-bearing structures. They've also delineated multiple, in fact, potential drill targets from the survey. At the same time, they've made further applications for additional copper and gold targets in northern Finland. So there's certainly some value add there. They'll be progressing the Finland project at the same time as the project Innes is developing as well. So I think there are several drivers here to push the stock higher. I think the key one, though, for investors is going to be the initial payment made by Demir once the final once the definitive agreement has been signed and signed and sealed. So that we're expecting in the next few months.
I mean, and with Conroy, of course, I've got the payment coming from Demir, but I mean, sort of going out past that, I mean, what does their sort of funding situation look like in terms of ongoing operations in terms of drilling? Are they going to have to be sort of bringing in other partners, or is this Demir going to be able to, the payment from Demir, sorry, is this going to be able to keep them funded for some time until they could possibly see more positive results from the drill program that would warrant maybe a farm in going forward? Or is this a case that you think there may be some form of capital needed to be raised at some point, in the not too distant future?
Well, the company raised, I think, something like 1.2 million last year in terms of placings. And there's also been some $500,000 raised in warrant exercises too. So certainly for the foreseeable future, we've got the company is well funded for the work it needs to do for now. But once Demir come in, then effectively they will be funding the development of the mine through to construction status. So whilst Conroy will obviously be divesting, you know, over half of the value of it. They know for a fact through the JORC resource estimate there are 517,000 ounces there, and a lot of the research they've undertaken in the region indicates that there's a lot more to be found. And of course, this is an area that has a great history of mining. There are some 20 lead mines, copper mines, antimony mines across the area. So it's been well mined in the past, but as we've found out so frequently in the past, with modern mining techniques, desktop analysis and data analysis techniques used today, old projects can be brought back to life and rejuvenated, and new opportunities discovered. And that's certainly been the case with the Longford Down massive series of projects the company's has developed. And of course, Professor Richard Conroy, he's an aging entrepreneur. He's been in the business for many years, and he's highly respected. And I think at this stage now, he'll be determined to get this across the line, both to bring the mine into production, and also, of course, you know, there'll be a lasting legacy there for him going forward.
Fantastic. So, Alan, thank you very much. So just as a recap there on the stocks that we've discussed today, Tertiary Minerals trades under the ticker of TYM. Argo Blockchain trades under the ticker of ARB. And just then was Conroy Gold and Natural Resources with a ticker of CGNR. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks, Jonathan. Good to be here.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.